live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And anytime I get to talk to my brothers in wrestling, I get excited. And I've had some very interesting stars on. But what I see this star is when I was not even into wrestling, really wasn't watching it as a, you know, just something to watch, never thought I'd ever be a professional wrestler. So he definitely is old school in that way, and being trained by Charlie Fulton and having this different thing, we're going to have a fun conversation. So celebrity fans out there, you're going to learn about when wrestling was wrestling. So I want to welcome the program, Brian Blair, from the Killer Bees, WWF star, and much, much more, Brian, as you're going to tell us in your career. Thanks again for calling, man.
Whoa, Big Neil, the real deal. Oh, yes, sir. Let me tell you something, Big Neil. I just took a cruise down A1A and stopped by my favorite lady's place at Hazel's Honey Hut. I picked myself up a quart of orange blossom special because I knew I was going to be on the show with you. So I chugged it on down, and I felt my toes start tapping. I felt my wings start flapping. And now I'm ready for some jaw-jacking and back-cracking with you, Big Neil, the real deal. 6'10" and all the women chase you again and again. I don't know what you got, brother, but you are the man.
All right, Brian's all fired up for sure. Awesome. Let's kind of go right specifically in your career. Did you always want to be a professional wrestler, Brian?
Yeah, let me calm down here. Of course, Neil, I always wanted to be a professional wrestler ever since I was in fifth grade and I got caught with food stamps at the USAF grocery store by 2 6th grade bullies. And they harassed me unbelievably before I got out of that USAF with the food stamp little thing, coupon change receipt that my mom told me I was going to get since my mom and dad were divorced and had five siblings and tough life. But it was good, you know, but I wanted some meat and was tired of Spam and powdered milk, powdered eggs, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, next day I went to school. My mom dropped me off about 300 yards from school, kissed me so I could, you know, pretend like I walked to school, number one. And number two, I didn't want any of my friends to see me kiss my mother. I thought, heavens forbid, you know, that would be terrible. So I walked to school to the front of Egypt Blake Elementary School. It's all true story. And there's a gathering of people around the front of Egypt Blake Elementary School on Sly Avenue. And I start to walk up to the front of the school to see what's going on, and I'm kind of in a hurry, and all of a sudden I start hearing, there's Blair, look, there he is. And people are laughing and staring, and all of a sudden I look, and the ugliest words in green spray paint were written all over that school, the front of the school. So I ran all the way home. I don't think I stopped at all. I ran. It was about a mile and a half, and not that far, not like I was running the marathon, but it was a long way for a fifth grader to be running and crossing Sly Avenue, that's for sure. And anyway, Mr. Agliano, a teacher of mine, came, spent about 2-3 hours with me, and gave me the total motivational rah-rah speech. You know, if you believe in yourself, you can be anything. You know, when you believe, you achieve, and when you achieve, you receive. And I'll never forget those words. And he poured it on, and you know, I totally bought into him, and just so happened that I loved wrestling. I started watching wrestling on TV, and I asked him if he thought I could be a professional wrestler, and he said, I just told you, you could be whatever you want to be. You got to put your mind to it. You got to really focus. But the first thing you focus on is there's nobody better than you. There's nobody more important than you. We're all the same regardless, and you've got to go back to school and get yourself a good education. Regardless, you could get hurt wrestling. And I kind of fell in love with Jack Briscoe as the time went on, but back then, Eddie Graham and the great Malenko were the big headliners, and as I got into high school, you know, I kept following Gordon Solie on Championship Wrestling from Florida every Saturday, and we'd go to the Armory every Tuesday night in this sweaty, sweaty place, but it was packed with like 3,500 people, and golly, it just happened so fast. The the wrestlers did a thing for the Sheriffsville Boys and Girls Villa. The Sheriffs sponsored this big thing for children, and also Eddie was into that. The Bristlers were into that, obviously, since Eddie was the boss. And they'd also go to the amateur wrestlers meets to look for, you know, maybe future talent. And they came to a few of my meets, and I had them get some publicity at that time. And lo and behold, I started babysitting Buddy Colt's kids, and it's just like everything worked out to I finally got my chance to go to the Sportatorium in Tampa, where they basically beat you up until you leave. It was, you know, Eddie wanted everybody to be able to protect themselves and nobody to say, hey, you fake wrestler, you know, that sleeper doesn't work. And you can't put that sleeper on. You had to know how to do everything. Plus, you had to be a tough guy or you were going to leave. Because in the first summer before I went back to school, to college, close to 100 people came. And, well, probably I would say maybe in the first two thing, about 100 people came, because the only three that made it were Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, myself, and Hulk Hogan.
Oh, my.
We were the only three out of, you know, like 50 people, you know, 60 people one summer, 40, 50 people the next summer. And people would literally leave their meal with their clothes left behind. They would leave in just whatever they decided to get in the ring with, a pair of tennis shoes and a pair of shorts. Or some people even had outfits and boots and jackets before they even knew a wrist lock from a wrist watch. It was kind of funny in a way, but they always wanted to hurt him, and I never wanted to, you know, break anybody's arm or, you know, they were pretty brutal there. And as a matter of fact, the first 3 days, Hiro Matsuda was the main instructor. And I don't know if you remember Hiro Matsuda.
No, I don't.
But he was a tough, tough Japanese guy that was barefoot, and he hardly ever smiled until you got to know him. And I never thought I'd get to know him, because the first day he exercised me so hard, I rolled out of the ring after he stretched me all over, rolled out of the ring, lost everything I had in my stomach. And he just looked at me and he said, come back tomorrow, same time. I said, yes, sir. So it's the same thing next come in the next day, Tuesday, and same thing happened. He stretched me. The same result. I rolled out of the ring. Wow, nothing left in me. He looked at me and kind of wondering whether I'd come back the next day. He said, okay, you come back tomorrow. I said, yes, sir, Mr. Matsuda. And I came back Wednesday, and same thing. Stretched me, beat me up. I could handle myself. Now, I was very, very good amateur. Well, I want to say very good. By high school standards, I was a really good amateur wrestler and not a bad street fighter, because of all the names and brutal things that went through me, and I worked out really hard and spent a lot of time in the gym to relieve frustrations and played a lot of sports. I think to this day, I think if you Google, I still have most letters at Tampa Bay Tech High School. And the third day when I rolled out of the ring, jumped down to look at me. He just wanted so bad just to watch me throw up and quit.
Right.
And I did not throw up. And he looked at me. He said to me, Neil, he goes, what's the matter, boy? You know, puke today. And he took his foot and lifted my chin up. And I looked at him right in the eye and I said, Mr. Matsuda, I've had nothing to eat since the last time I threw up. And I saw him turn his head and kind of crack a smile. And so he said, you come back tomorrow. And I came back the next day, and he took it a little bit more easy on me. And no more puke happened. It just started into a great relationship. It allowed me to be what I wanted to be and live the dream that I always dreamed about since that young age.
Oh, my. Well, you know, it's very interesting, Brian. I had the same experience in Iron Mike Sharp's gym when I was just doing it as a summer thing before I decided to get trained by Charlie. And they did rough us up, and then they taught us to rough, but not to that point. And I think that it really did help the business in so many ways. Brian, that they did these things because the right people were in the business, not like today where anyone could put on put wrestling boots on and call themselves a professional wrestler. And I respect that beyond belief. And I kind of wish I did get that beating that you got or really worked hard like that when I started, because it really kind of grounds you with humility and understanding where you're coming from, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And it allows you to, back in those days when there was, kayfabe and you protected the business, it allowed you to be able to protect yourself and protect the business at the same time. And and believe me, there was a lot of smart Alex and a lot of times when you had to do that. Very, very interesting. But, again, I'm grateful that I did it that way. And I really think the people that did break in that way, the people we were talking about earlier, the Steve Kearns, the Hulk Hogan, the different people like that, they've all made money. And, you know, that wasn't the only school that did it like that. Of course, Vern Gagne's school did it the same way. So, Ken Patera and all the guys, Ric Flair, that came out of that school. And then, of course, the third place that did it the same way, where everybody kind of had the same concept and the same philosophy about training their young talent before they ever stepped a foot in the ring. The third one would be Stu Hart's dungeon in Calgary.
Wow.
So if you're from one of those three places, the odds are you've made money in the wrestling business.
And that's where that was. You go get trained in these places. And if you can't hack it, you're done. And so when you talked about three people only lasting, Paul Orndorff, Hulk Hogan, and yourself, people would say, I know who Mr. Wonderful is. I know who Hulk Hogan is, you know, just walking down the street. But yourself, you weren't a journeyman, but in the territories, you were a huge star. And kind of explaining to people specifically how large the territories were. I worked in a small territory when territories were dying, Burt Prentice's, and then I also did some stuff for USWA. But this was just these regional territories. The business was much different then. Explain that to us, and then explain your run in Tampa's territory and stuff like that.
Sure. The territories were much different, and I had a lot of runs. You know, in Florida, I was the Florida heavyweight, two-time Florida heavyweight champion, two-time Southern heavyweight champion. You know, I wrestled Ric Flair three times to a one-hour draw. Main evented all over the place, but at the beginning you didn't. And you would wrestle literally. My first year, I only had one day off.
Wow.
And it wasn't pretty. I had one day off, and I don't really remember which day that was, but this is how we would do it. Monday would be Fort Lauderdale or Fort Myers. Tuesday would be Tampa, which was always my favorite place to wrestle. It's hometown, but it's just the way the building was and the electricity. As I said before, there's 3,500 people packed in an un-air-conditioned place every night. So you did wrestling Tuesday in Tampa. Then Wednesday at 11 o'clock, you would start television. And you would have at least two matches, sometimes three, on television, for television. And those matches wouldn't go any longer than 10 minutes generally. Then from television, you would have to go to Miami and drive there 350 miles if you couldn't afford the $60 that everybody pooled together. Not everybody, but the top guys pooled together to get into an airplane.
Oh, yeah.
So, then you get back to Tampa very, very late if you were driving, obviously, and even late if you were flying. The matches didn't get over until 10, 10:30. So Thursday, we would do Jacksonville. So we'd have to drive up to Jacksonville, a couple hundred miles up to Jacksonville, come back to Tampa. Friday would be another, like a spot show, what we would call a spot show. We'd go to some town in either Chiefland or just a different, smaller town in Florida that was maybe run once every 2 months.
Right.
And Saturday, we would do either Lakeland or the Bayfront Center in St. Petersburg. And Sunday, every other Sunday, you had a double shot. I don't know if you're counting how many matches this is, but you would have a double shot every other Sunday. You would do the High Life on in Ocala at 1 p.m. and then you would do the Eddie Graham Sports Arena in Orlando.
It's crazy.
That's seven. So you're wrestling, you know, 10 times a week on the average. That's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of wear and tear on the body.
Yes, it definitely is, and you guys didn't do as crazy things as some of these guys do now, and that's why their careers last such shorter time, because of the story and about really wrestling and things. But I remember working six nights a week for a year and a half, and man, it taught you how to work for sure in front of a crowd, and that's what you did at the beginning. As you said, you were pretty much not the journeyman type of wrestler to start your career before they gave you the big push, so that you learn from these great veterans and stuff, right?
Right. We had some great veterans to learn from, and I was very fortunate, you know, being on the cusp of where I was when I started in like '78. You know, guys, the really good guys from the 50s and the 60s were retiring. And, you know, you had I think I had a few people's last matches, like the Big O, Big Orton Sr., and Angelo Poffo, and, the Vachons, Maurice Vachon.
Oh, wow,
So I got to have some of the last matches, and at the same time, you'd have the guys that had been wrestling for 6-8 years that were good workers, like Ric Flair and Steve Kern and Ted DiBiase and guys like that who were older, but that knew a lot. So I got to see a lot of generations, and I just wrestled. You go to YouTube, look up Brian Blair and Port Richey, and see me wrestle last week. And I wrestled 2 days before that in Charlotte at the FanFest. That was right after I just had a quad tendon tear. So that was my first two matches back after a pretty steady schedule prior to that, at least working on the weekends. It's like I have a saying, you know, you can take the wrestler out of the ring, but you can't take the ring out of the wrestler. It's in your blood.
I agree. It was very hard for me to cut my ties completely from it at a very young age, meaning I was 29 after starting at 20. So I did 9 years in the business, made a couple little comebacks, but it's still in my blood. And I love talking to you guys about these things. And like you said, this is what you did. This is what you loved. So in that territory time, so you're still working. How old are you now, Brian? But if you don't mind me asking.
No, I don't mind you asking. I'm 57 now, and I'm in really good shape. I've never gotten out of shape. It's hard when you're rehabilitating for an injury. You're concentrating on your leg or whatever. But if you watch match, I wrestled with a 37-year-old guy, and he got winded, and I didn't. Same thing in in Charlotte, in North Carolina, I wrestled Matt Riviera, who was like 30 years old, and he was puffing and puffing, and, you know, I was ready to go another 20 minutes. So it's just, you know, it's how you take care of yourself, how you move. I mean, you know, 6'10", you, Neil, it's got to be tough to go too long of a match. I mean, you're carrying some big, big weight, and kind of look at and remember Andre the Giant when I think of you. And you know, Andre was the kind of guy that he couldn't go a real, real long time.
The South made me do those 30-minute matches. Really, they were rough. The South did that. They really made us work those long matches. So, yeah, I mean, but I understand. Yeah, when we would work out in the gym with some of my guys from Charlie's, and man, they work us, and I'm like, geez, we're going to go 25 minutes? Are you kidding me? Just doing holds, you know, because that's how Charlie taught us. And basically, you know, working around and all this stuff, I'm like, I'm huffing and puffing 25 minutes. So finally, let's take it home. And it definitely did help in so many ways, especially if you're the heel and you're putting the heat on the guy the whole time and the babyface is just selling. So it is what it is. So that's amazing to know you're still working. But again, you got to think about it. So why, Brian, and this is a question, and I want to get right into a little bit of the WWF. Why did your career after the WWF, you never ever went back again to one of the big orgs, you know, TNA or WWE or different things like this, that, you know, you're still working and there are guys your age still working in the big time in certain aspects and have those opportunities?
The thing was is that I still was working. I had my contract for New Japan Pro Wrestling, so I was going there 8 to 10 times a year. Plus, I owned 4 Gold's Gyms, and I also would work, for example, 1993. One of my favorite tours was in Russia with the Samoans and Ken Patera. I wrestled their big Russian heavyweight guy, and they wanted to bring him. So here I am trying to teach this, you know, Olympic champion how to, you know, wrestle without killing each other and still being able to, you know, supposed to say hello to our family after the match and or our friends or do whatever. And, you know, just be able to breathe and have a match the next day. So that was an interesting challenge. We did that 6 days in a row. Fortunately, Bam Bam Bigelow tagged me and wrestled the guy twice. I wrestled him 4 times. And so it was... It was interesting there, but that's just one of many. I've been to over 50 countries,
right,
and most of those were without the WWF
yes.
at that time,
yes.
WWE at the time. So even though you didn't see me on WWF or TNA, I never really stopped wrestling. I haven't stopped wrestling at all since I was 21 years old.
And that's a definite testament in certain aspects. But we look at careers of NBA players, different things that, you know, they disappeared in the NBA, went overseas and all that. So it's the same kind of situation. But then, you know, you're doing your craft. You're doing what you want to do, not the wrong gimmick, all the different types of things. And you make those right decisions. Your WWF experience, because, again, because we could have hours of talks, because I mean, I did some research just on your wiki, but I understand the biz that you went through the territories, then you went to another territory, which was McMahon Senior's territory, and then at that point in time, that's when the WWF became the WWF, right? 3 W's to 2, right? Am I correct?
Correct. That's correct. And I worked for Vince Senior, like you said. He's the one that got me started in Japan. And then when I left and came back to WWF, when the other W was dropped and Vince Senior had passed, they wouldn't allow us to go to Japan without, you know, their blessing. And it just wasn't in the stars for me. So I had to just buy the WWF wave. Not that that was a bad wave. That was a great wave. But anyway, that's how that worked out.
So the Killer Bees, and this is where a lot of people remember you, especially my age and different things. That experience in tag teams and working some great tag teams, was that an amazing experience, especially when you saw wrestling just take off? This is where it finally became a mainstream thing that people knew about everywhere, not just in the local territories. You can go all over the world and people recognize you now. Tell us, like, once the television hits in the 80s and you're with the Killer Bees, was that just the point where you're like, okay, wrestling has totally changed in my expectations and mainstream recognition and everything?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, being on TV where you're in 150 different countries is very powerful. You know, people know you everywhere. I've wrestled in places that you and your listeners have probably never heard of for the most part. And that's a place that I wrestled in called Brunzel and Frenchie Martin, a whole bunch of guys, Bam Bam. We went to a place called Kota Kinabalu on the island of Sabu.
Oh, wow.
It's an island off the Malaysian coast. But these were things that were done non-WWF. WWF-wise, I mean, we'd still go to Italy and, oh, gosh, there's so many countries. We were on the first trip to Australia, to New Zealand, to, oh, gosh, just many, many, many countries. And watched WWF just explode. You know, I was there in the middle when in 85, I was in Atlanta when TBS actually did the first go into another person's territory deal, when the whole crew, Tommy Rich and Paul Orndorff and Tony Atlas, myself, Tito Santana, we went to Columbus, Ohio, and we started making that a regular, the Ohio territory, a regular venue off the TBS television. And then there's a long, there's a very interesting history between Vince buying TBS, then him having to sell it back. He bought it for $1 million, sold it back for $2 million. The Briscoes were in on that. I mean, they'd be, Gerald Briscoe would be a great guy to get on your show.
I'd love to talk to him. Yeah, absolutely. We'll just definitely keep in touch in these things. They're such great stories, for sure. But with that experience in WWF as the Killer Bees, with your own action figure, T-shirts, and the whole thing, it really, I think, helped brand wrestlers so that they can become more after WWF and still be able to be that name going to different towns and different things and live off of it in certain aspects, except if your gimmicks, you can't push it in certain ways. But it really is.
No, go ahead, Neil.
When you agree, Brian, that's where wrestlers learn that they are brands and they can merchandise themselves and they can make extra money, not just in local territories after they have a run like the WWF or WCW.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt. There's a lot of money to be made in the merchandising. And when we had our second action figures come out in 2010, I mean, we made a lot of money off that action figure. And, you know, we still get royalty checks because now there's a 24-hour wrestling channel, which really cut into everything. And there's a big uproar about that because nobody's getting a nickel off that. Even though everybody worked hard and on television, you would work television and only make $25 or $30. In these territories where they're using like the Texas television or the Mid South television or the Florida television or the different televisions of the territories that Vince had. So I mean, it's a great subscription. I'm not trying to be a salesman for WWE, but for $10 a month, you know, be able to watch all the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
You know, watch anything you want to watch, any territory. You can name the guy and have the territory, whatever.
Really? Wow. Oh, that's awesome. Especially the names that I did wrestle in my career, because again, being 6'10", I got to wrestle lots of guys like you all the time and later in the career for sure. And if I was going to make a comeback and say, hey, I'm going to wrestle Brian Blair in Tampa, I would work you because you're old school. And even though I have a bad back and am a little skinnier, we'd have a great match because I've learned from the best as well. And I'd enjoy having a match with you for sure. You're a great guy.
Oh, absolutely. We'd have a great match, Neil.
Absolutely. And once you learn the business from the right people, it's sad what we're seeing in this business. We're seeing that guys don't want to make money anymore, Brian, which saddens me. And I'm kind of finishing up the show in that way, where I think it's hurt the business and where guys would work in ECW for hardly any money in different places and things like that. And we're professionals and they would rather be stars than make money. And it hurts us because it hurts the business in general, because it was all about, hey, we were professionals. Any professional in any other sport would never say, I'd rather be a star than get paid. Would you agree in that fact?
I agree. And one thing you kind of made me think about is so many guys that made a lot of money have just, you know, blown it.
Yes.
And you know, unfortunately... fortunately, we have the Cauliflower Alley Club, and I would encourage your members that like that enjoy wrestling to please go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org and become a member of the greatest philanthropy there is. The only one for wrestlers. I mean, we've given out over $100,000 in the last 10 years. People that have, you know, made them happy through wrestling, and for some reason have, you know, falling on hard times, whether it's medical, and believe me, probably 60% of it is medical. They didn't have insurance,
right,
or something, and they're getting drained to death. And so, fortunately, we have the ability to help the wrestlers because of the wonderful fans that join the Cauliflower Alley Club for $25 for a year or $300 for a lifetime membership, and so much comes with that. It's not just the fact that, you know, you get five issues of the year, which is stuff that is not on the internet, is stuff that it's comes snail mail, but it's like six pages of some of the most interesting stuff that you ever want to read if you're a wrestling fan. And also the fact that we have a convention, which is generally held in Las Vegas, Nevada. This time, this year, we'll have our 50th anniversary. Can you imagine that? 50 years. And that will be on April 13th, 14th, and 15th. In Vegas, and we have $32 or $36 hotel rooms, $100 or $110 for the event, which includes some awesome meals. And there'll be new young WWE wrestlers. There'll be wrestlers from the past. Probably at least this year we'll have at least 300 wrestlers and probably 600-700 fans.
That's
really good
great.
Fans.
Yeah.
Okay. Fans that understand the business and don't harass the guys too much, and we all become friends. And that's what's really nice about it, because I've made so many friends that are fans that have just become some of my closest friends.
Well, definitely. Well, we're going to have to talk, if you're involved with the Cauliflower, in that way that maybe we could do some interviews to promote the event and get some of the other wrestlers on to promote it and throughout till the event comes. I think it would be great to try to do some segments on that for sure and help out in any way and get more and more promotion for it via my Twitter and all these different things, because I think it's a great thing for sure.
I know you're the man, Neil, so if it can be done, you could do it. And, I'm very blessed that I was just nominated as the president-elect. Now I've got a lot of big shoes to follow. Nick Bockwinkel is stepping down the first day of the reunion coming up, so I will be the president of the CAC. And, you know, you've got guys like Luthez and Bronco Nagurski and Red Bastien and
wow. All
these guys that were top wrestlers, and to be named the president just kind of blew me away.
Well, you definitely are living as a wrestler, meaning keep your career going, working every town and all over the world, and constantly want to promote the business and look at wrestling as an important thing for sure, Brian. Do you have any place to contact you? Where's the best to contact you, social media-wise or anything like that?
Facebook or LinkedIn. You and I are LinkedIn buddies. My email, Brian Blair, brianblair.com. You know, I answer my email when I get it, and generally that keeps me up at night, but I don't mind. And the easiest way, though, is the social media route. Twitter, KillerB1B.
Okay, well, I'll have to follow you on Twitter for sure as well, and do all that. And it's so interesting. I had the Memphis story on a couple of weeks ago for this great Memphis documentary, because again, I learned so much from Southern Wrestling, and to get to talk to you. And one thing, Brian, you got to tell a lot of your guys, if they say they're not promoting anything, they don't want to promote the business. And I'm just giving you this as a straight shootout to all the guys that say, no, I won't do your show because I have nothing to promote. There are fans out there that just paid their hard-earned money and loved to hear back from you guys. And the more you keep your name out there, it's the best for sure. And I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, Big Neil, the real deal. It's always a pleasure being on your show. I mean, it's been a wonderful pleasure. And anytime you call me, I'll be there.
All right, we'll definitely do that. And I'll shoot you an email with some ideas of how we can promote the event in April and even do some interviews on location with some of the guys, especially the older guys that don't get that PR. No one wants to talk to them anymore. And they're the most interesting people in the world.
And one thing, Neil, that maybe we could talk about next time is the fact that I was a real commissioner in a state that is 1,072.8 square miles, almost the size of Rhode Island. I had to get more votes than seven other governors did. And, that was a great thing in itself, served on the Citizens Advisory Committee for 2 years and at-large county commissioner for 4 years and still wrestled.
We got to do part two for sure. You've too much to talk about, man. So good talking to you, Brian.
Great talking to you too, Neil. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I had one of this reality star on my show once, and we had a blast. And I said, why don't we get the whole cast on, or try to get the whole cast on? Because, again, when you think about things and reality and really learn more about the show, everyone has a story. So I'm so excited to welcome the program, the Dukes of Haggle from the Discovery Channel. And first, I want to welcome the program, James Sansdeck. James, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Neil?
Fantastic. So, James, you have a huge crew of people on the line. Hopefully they're mute till you introduce them. So introduce, first of all, who else do we have on the line right now?
We have Ron Boudreaux. You on there, Ron?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Ron, great to have you on the show. Well, I'm going to kind of like put together questions for all of you and the story, and that's the best thing. But go ahead, James, introduce the next person that's on the line.
Andy King.
Yo, how you doing?
Hey, Andy, how are you?
I'm alive and well and above ground.
All right, fantastic. Who else?
I believe right now that's it. We should have a couple more people chiming in as we go. I don't know. Everybody on the show said they were calling, but
yeah, we always could schedule again, and we could also schedule late night if we want to go and do that. Let's just kind of jump right to the ship, James. We talked about how you got involved in being on the show, but let's go first of all with Mr. Boudreaux. Now, tell me specifically enough. Were you a little hesitant when you first were asked to do a reality show, to be part of a reality show?
Yeah, I was a little hesitant, but I've been on a couple other reality shows, so I said, what the hell, I'll give it a try. I thought it was somebody messing with me, but it was real. It was Discovery Channel. 4 months later, we were up in North Carolina filming everything, and, you know, we were there for 4 months doing 12 episodes, and everything came out good, and it was a whole bunch of fun, and now here we are talking on radio.
So it's interesting to ask you, so what other reality shows were you on? Did you do guest appearances for other reality shows, Ron?
Yes.
But this...
Yes, it was Full Throttle, which was the History Channel, and Unique Whips with Will Castro, which was the Speed Channel.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you just were in a certain part of the show, not like one of the main characters. Okay, and how about...
I was just...
Yeah, so, okay, Andy, specifically, were you concerned in the same type of question? Were you concerned when you first were approached to do a reality show and be part of it?
I wasn't worried about anything. I gave up worrying years ago.
But, I mean, did you think this was an opportunity for you that was a big to be on a national show, internationally, really, an international show on the Discovery Channel?
I figured when they showed up and sent me the tickets to where to go and a place to stay, and they were paying me, I'm a coming. It's that simple. From there on in, it was nothing but fun.
Right. All right, fantastic. Now, James, did you know these two very well before the show started?
No, we all met when we got there. It was just a bunch of guys that kind of did their own thing. Ron with his cars, Andy or Storm motorcycles, and they put us all together in competition, and it was fun. I mean, we had a really good time, so we got to get to know each other along the way.
Okay, Ron, tell me your background. We learned about James' background when he was on the radio show. Now tell me a little about your background, Ron.
I've been working on cars since I was 16, 17 years old, and 50 years old, and still doing. I really dream and sweet cars. I wasn't afraid like, you know, maybe some of them were, because I was the only one-man team, because I didn't need any help to come down there and bust their behinds. But we built some crazy things. We built barbecue pits out of Ford front caps, monster trucks out of convertible Camaros. We built a jet moat out of an old 1956 aluminum moat. The resto ride out of a 51 Chev. I mean, we built all kind of stuff. It was just nothing but fun.
And so you were there seeing this as a great opportunity, as a competition. And that's what, again, this Discovery Channel's reality shows are more about, teaching people stuff in specific ways and discovering your hidden talents, Ron. And it sounds like you definitely have some hidden talents. And so you have a business where you're at doing all those types of things?
Yeah, New Orleans, Louisiana.
What is the business so we can plug it for our international audience?
My business is Boudreaux's Cars. We build custom cars. We build cars for movie sets. We build cars for individuals. We build cars for anybody that's got money.
All right. And could you customize a car for me? Because, you know, in Pennsylvania, I'm 6'10". They don't move the back seat, the front seat enough. So I really don't have the leg room. You could set up something where I'd have better leg room, right? You know, like they have to do for Shaq.
Absolutely.
And all
that. Shaq. I can move the seat all the way into the trunk if you want.
That would be perfect for me for sure. So we'll have to make a trip out to Louisiana to talk to Ron. Now, Andy, your talent and gift and what your background is. Tell us.
Well, I've been playing with boats, motors, planes, and trains since I was a kid, buying, selling, trading. It doesn't make no difference to me. You got the time. I got the time. Let's go find it. Let's do it. And as far as building things, I can build anything I want. I built motorcycles from the ground up. And Ron, well, nobody wanted to work with him. That's why he worked alone.
So,
what do you think of that, Ron?
Oh my, we're already gonna get some heat. We're already gonna get some heat on the show for sure. Now, Andy, now when you were saying you did all these different things, where's your business located? Do you have a business?
I'm in Gloucester, North Carolina, King's Auto Sales. Yeah, I buy and sell cars and, you know, fix them and all that.
And tell us the premise. I'm going to go jump to James now. How does this work now? Andy's part of this competition. Ron's part of this competition. There's a couple other people on the show. Explain how it works, James, and what your role is in all this.
Well, basically, we just pick projects, and every week we would get these projects done, and we would all show up at the auction house and just try to outdo each other.
And it would not just be cars then, right, James? It would be other things, correct?
It was every kind of item you could imagine. It was boats, it was cars, it was things that most people don't even really think about. Old Coke machines and
goats. Don't forget goats.
And we had a clown drink machine that looked way better than just a stock Coke machine. Mine had a microwave oven in it, hot dog cooker, refrigerator full of beer, big screen TV that flipped out the top. It wasn't just your run-of-the-mill Coke machines. It was cool.
So for Ron and Andy, you guys are car people. How did you fix up other stuff and be able to do it? First of all, that question for Ron.
Well, pretty much, my father was a person that could do anything, and I'm an identical twin, and me and my twin brother both evidently got half his genes, because whatever I can do, he can, so... He fools with boats, I fool with cars and antique clocks and antiques and anything in between.
All right, cool. How about you, Andy, being able to go from cars to putting together other things and fixing up other things? Once you can fix up cars, you can fix up anything, you think?
Well, most of the time, when you look at it, almost everything's mechanical one way or another. You know, it takes some kind of mechanical ability to either paint it, fix it, nail it, screw it, bang it, whatever. You know, it's just... you either got it or you don't. You look at something and you can see what it could be, or it ain't worth messing with. Shit can it. You know, he's selling for scrap metals. Ron knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, again, we're talking to the Dukes of Haggle. We have three representatives on the show with James Sanzek, and we're hoping, James, other people are calling in, right? If they don't, we're going to have to get them on and set that up for next month, the ones that did not go on, and so that everyone gets their chance to share the story. And James, can we watch the show on demand right now? Can we pick it up certain places in the U.S. now as well? Is it on Netflix and stuff to pick up the episodes?
You can look on Netflix, but your best bet right now is I've just been telling people to set their DVRs to look for Dukes of Haggle, because it pops up randomly on Discovery Channel and on Destination America. Right now, Discovery D-Max has us on full-time overseas, so we're still currently on in like 40 countries right now overseas, but yet our U.S. airtime, we don't know what slot we're going to be put or where our home's going to be yet.
So they went and just aired you at random then, it sounds like, at times.
Yeah, that's what they continue to do is I got a call, I think it was 6 days before we actually aired on Destination America, that let me know that we were going to be on Destination America for 6 episodes, and that played. And then since then, I haven't really heard anything, but I've been hearing a lot of stuff from overseas via my Twitter account.
Yeah, it's so amazing to look at when you're talking about other countries and how they're going to take to this. And again, it's funny when we talk about my buddy Justin, and you guys are both on the same time when we're talking Destination America, right, James?
Correct.
Yeah. So, and Justin, it was a trip when we brought on his other guy, and he's funny guy for sure. Now, Ron, now let's go. How did your life change after being on television? Especially, are you getting recognized other places now after being on in the U.S.? Have people recognized you at certain times?
Maybe a couple of people, but I think more people see the other shows more than they see this because it just hasn't aired enough down here yet.
Gotcha. But if you're probably a big star in other countries. You need to go travel there, right?
If I am, I'm the last to know it.
Well, Ron, can we connect to you in any place? Are you a social media guy like James?
Am I what?
Social media guy. Do you have a Facebook or Twitter or anything?
Yeah, I do. I'm not really know how to use it much, but yeah, I have a Facebook account.
Okay. James, you're going to have to send me some of the stuff. That's funny because honestly, guys, one, it does go on in the States. You have a regular time slot. You got to work that social media. They don't teach you this stuff. Discovery doesn't. TLC doesn't. None of them teach it to you. You guys got to get verified as a celebrity, all those different things. And the only way to do it is to be very active. Now, how about you, Andy? Do you have a Facebook, Twitter, and all that stuff and that your fans can follow you?
No.
No?
No, I don't have any. No, I've had a few of the locals who've seen the show, you know, and then some people I don't know recognize me and stuff. But other than that, it's been about the same.
You don't know about the Twitter and the Facebook deal? Do you have
no,
a Twitter?
I haven't messed with it at all.
Now, James, you've really become pretty social media savvy in specific ways and different things. Who told you this stuff, or did you already know how to do this before the show?
Actually, what I did, Neil, was while we were doing the show, I formed a Twitter account for the show for me with hashtag Dukes of Hoggle, and just started promoting the show, and just went from there. And you know, my Twitter account is growing by leaps and bounds every day. I'm in contact with people from overseas who are currently watching that game. So it's been pretty interesting learning along the way. And communicating with all these people from overseas, because I've been using Google Translate a lot in order to send them messages in their own language.
Now, so James, about who else is on the show? We talked about Andy, Ron, yourself. Who else is on this show?
Right. Well, we have Andy's partner, Fred. And Andy can talk about him because, I mean, Fred's a great guy. And then we also have Gene Roberts and his partner, no, I can't think of it. I'm a little nervous.
That's okay.
Yeah, well, you stay that way.
Robert.
Yeah, that's right, huh?
Gene Parker's Robert.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Robert.
Well, cool.
His last name is Price. Robert Price. And then we have Mickey Rhodes, who's my partner on the show, which was supposed to call, but I think he had a doctor's appointment or something he had said earlier. So he's also
on the show. Brain surgery?
You know what? I'm kind of hoping, Andy.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so again, we're with the Dukes of Hoggle, and we're having a good time. So we got about half this cast on. We'll have to get the other half on the next time. So I'm going to hit up Ron and Andy with questions. Now, Ron, specifically enough, is it because you said it's not been shown certain places yet. Do you feel that it's going to help grow your business once it gets out there in more places in the U.S. where people can watch?
Well, I mean, honestly, I'm really just looking forward to it starting airing regularly and at a time slot that you could actually look up and see when it's going to come on, because there's so many people that want to see it but are missing out on it because it may come on without any, you know, warning that, hey, it's going to be on tonight at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, right now, our biggest fight with them is, you know, give us some warning so we can have people watch it so people will want to watch it and grow our audience.
Absolutely. What about you, Andy? Is that one of your hopes, is that it'll help grow the business being on television once it does get the bigger airing?
Well, it sure can't hurt it, you know. I mean, so it's going to be what it's going to be. I'm with Ron. I want to see it come on. What they tell us is going to be on a certain time on a Tuesday, and you can tell people, hey, tune in and watch it, you know, and hopefully it'll grow from there. Last I heard, it was supposed to October the 1st, beyond Discovery at 9 o'clock at night. That's the last I heard, just coming October. So,
Did we just get an announcement, James? Is that true? Can you confirm that?
No, I can't confirm it. It's all rumor and conjecture.
So, James,
I have been trying to confirm that. I'm going to continue to keep vetting that with Discovery Channel and with Destination America until I can find out. Hopefully, I'll have enough forewarning that I can go ahead and, you know, let you know, Neil, and let as many people know via social media as I can. The air dates, and of course these guys, I'll call them too and let them know what's going on.
All right, so here let's go.
I've tried to call and got no reply from anybody else.
Now, so James, are you the one that's the coordinating the whole show pretty much? Are you the one that they kind of contact to tell what's going on, or is it just each person?
I guess maybe I've been kind of cheerleading in a little bit on this deal.
Yeah, it's tough, guys. I hope that happens. You get a big time slot, because then really I will help you in this process. James is doing an excellent job, but to help the whole cast get over more and more, because you guys seem like a cast of characters. You will, trust me, really get over with the audiences, especially getting on a regular basis. So I hope that happens. I'm glad that we got you back on the Celebrity Show again. So, James, so I guess next month we're going to have some other of the cast. We can't get them all on the line at once. And maybe I can make a joke about that, but I won't do that tonight. So, James, where can we find information on you? And then we'll ask about Ron and Andy. I guess you could just say they got to Google Ron and Andy, right? Or pretty much, James, give us the contact info for you. Yeah.
And anybody can try to get a hold of me via Twitter anytime at James Sanzik, or hashtag Dukes at Hagel. Either one. I answer all questions and everything there online. And then I would guess, yeah, you can Google the individual people on the show's names, and it's going to come up with all the scenes that they were on and everything that was on, and there should be Discovery Channel information on them there. And hopefully I can get these guys on Twitter pretty quick here, and more people can start talking to them, because I'm getting Boudreaux's fan mail in my Twitter.
Wow. So you guys got to get going, Ron and Andy. You know, I'm a Twitter master.
Yeah, I'll get together with Jimmy there, and we'll straighten something out.
So, yeah, definitely, Andy. I'll help you out on that one.
So,
all right, bro. Appreciate it.
Well, my Facebook is BoudreauxRonald@gmail.com.
Okay. That's your Facebook. We can look him up. James, I've tried friending you on Facebook, and you've ignored me.
Actually, I have my Facebook set up, and I have the one that says Jimmy Sanzik, and believe it or not, Neil, I don't remember what the code is to get on it, so I have to reset that one up, because I set that one up about a year ago, and I never used it, and I'm going to give you my personal one that I just have my family and stuff on.
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook. I'm friends with Justin, so we can kind of connect that way.
Yeah.
I hope this grow with you guys, and Justin and I are talking about a couple little projects. We're really excited. We're going to probably get you on the TV show next, because we're looking at probably going on DirecTV. I forget which one of those satellite deals for the television show, and it'll be where it's call-in show, and we'll get you guys on for that one, or at least one of you. But good talking to all of you. Best of luck, and it was a lot of fun talking to you, and I hope October's it. Because then I will.
Yeah, three of us.
Yeah, so let's hope for it, and I'm sure all seven of you definitely do. So thanks again, Jimmy, for calling. Thanks again, Andy, and thanks again, Ron. I like calling you James. I guess that's because that's your Twitter handle. But do you go by James and Jimmy?
You know what? Just Jimmy, James. It doesn't matter.
I don't even remember if I called you Jimmy or not.
Mad at me.
Did I call you James last time or Jimmy? That's how.
I think you called me a little both, which is fine. Like I said, normally James was when my folks were mad at me. So
I'm not mad.
I can understand that.
I'm not mad at you. Are you guys, any of you guys professional wrestling fans? By the way, before I say goodbye, any of you guys pro wrestling fans?
Yes. I like wrestling.
Okay, do you remember back in the 80s, the Killer Bees? Who remembers the Killer Bees in WWF? Anyone remember them?
The name sounds familiar.
They feuded with the British Bulldogs and all those teams. Well, I'm going to have Brian Blair on in about a couple minutes. So, from the Killer Bees.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, you got to connect. Yeah, I was a professional wrestler, too. Yeah, so we're going to have a fun conversation. So, best of luck, guys. And I can't wait to hear the good news. All right, take care. All right, see ya. Bye-bye.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and we're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show and the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really excited to have a really quick interview, but such a honor to have on the program Emmy Award winner Dan Bukatinski, James Novak on the ABC hits drama Scandal. Dan, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm really excited, and I know that you have something that you have another guest with us today, and we're going to talk about something that is that you have, which is celiac disease, and yes. You're here to inform us about that. So tell us who else we have on the line.
Well, about 7 or 8 years ago, after my father passed away, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disease that makes wheat gluten, which a lot of people don't realize is in wheat products and a lot of other products like soy sauce and many others. It literally makes your antibodies in your body attack itself. And the only way to fight it is to eat a completely clean and simple gluten-free diet, which I didn't even know what it was at the time. Completely stressful. But I was introduced very early on to products and simple foods like a Lara bar. And that's what Laura's here, who created it out of just 3 ingredients. I'm telling you, like, anytime there's more than 3 or 4 ingredients on any package, I have to run.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Laura, how are you? Laura Merkin. I'm really excited to talk to you as well and how this is able to help people with celiac disease and also people that are looking for gluten-free products. Tell us a little about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hi. Good morning, Neil. Thanks for having us. When I created Lara Bar, my goal was to make something that tasted indulgent and delicious, but it was made of very simple and gluten-free ingredients, just fruit, nuts, and spices. So one of Dan's favorites is cherry pie, and there's just 3 simple ingredients in there. Almonds, cherries, and dates. That's it.
And you came up with this whipping up in like a Cuisinart.
Well, I got inspired on a hike one day in the Rocky Mountains a little over 10 years ago, and I thought, why hasn't somebody made something indulgent and delicious, but it's really made of whole foods and good for us?
Well, as a celiac, you get so tired of eating stuff that tastes like mulch, and these are so. This was like real food. It tasted like you were having dessert, and it has energy in it. And I'm a dad, so I'm always feeding my kids and trying to come up with desserts that aren't so brownie-like.
Well, and I got my inspiration from pies and cookies and cakes, just using fruit, nuts, and spices.
Awesome.
That was my intention.
You know, it's amazing, Dan, is that the fact is when you're, you know, filming and doing all these different things that you do, you need to have that quick on to grab a bar really quickly, especially and so that you keep to your diet.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And also I was juggling, like, I have very small kids at home, and I certainly have been ever since I've been acting on the show. And at Scandal, there's, you know, you go to the craft service table, and it's all bagels and croissants and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And you're so psyched when there's something very simple and delicious that you can have, and you don't feel like you're depriving yourself. And I'm always putting bars, Lara bars in my bag, and I used to put them in the diaper bag, and the compartment of my car, and they're on set. So that is definitely an added bonus.
So you must be really excited for Dan to be speaking about this, Laura, especially having someone as an Emmy Award winner to be on to help promote your product.
Well, it's a true honor, and again, my intention was to make this product really great and good for a lot of different people with special diets, but also people that just want to simply eat healthy.
Right.
And it's wonderful that it reaches out to so many different people.
Well, I'm glad to have you both on the show. I know everyone needs to go check out your Facebook.com Lara Bar page and also www.larabar.com to find out more information on you, and we all could check out Dan on Scandal and much, much more. So I appreciate you guys both coming by to take time to talk about it. And for people that are dealing with celiacs, they need to really look for an alternative by having this bar so that they can stick to their diet. So thanks again for calling, guys.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, powered by the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment.